Football season may be over, but there's always enough football to talk about. Welcome to season 2 of the Football Corner, Munch's very own home for all things football.
Woohoo!
My name is Vikram.
And my name is Shreyas.
If you guys are new, you can check us out wherever you get your podcasts. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Castbox, etc., etc., etc.
You can also find us on our website, munchamedia.com, or at Munch's Sports on all social media.
If you like fun football content, check out our Facebook group, The Football Corner, where fans share fun memes, updates, and news from the world of football. Let's dive into the end-of-season matches, starting with the Champions League final. It was, I think, from an excitement point of view, it wasn't all there. But from a footballing perspective, I still enjoyed it.
From an analysis point of view, from a tactical sort of standpoint, 100%. We can see, you know, Klopp sort of, in terms of his, like, his game plan and stuff, just it shone through throughout. We're going to talk about the midfield in a bit. But yeah, I think that early goal just killed everything. I mean, if we got to see Liverpool's closing down, Liverpool's attack with Mane and Salah, which was missing, we didn't get to see Spurs midfield and forward, you know, do their thing. So that kind of was disappointing. So just to see the energy sapped out of them and to see that, like, they were just helpless and nothing worked for them, That kind of sucked.
Yeah, and especially after seeing both these teams play the way they did in the semifinals, everyone is just expecting so much with the final. And I don't know, I think the first goal completely changed the game plans. Liverpool went into slightly more defensive mode.
Right.
But let's just start with the match, man. What do you think of the penalty?
It's super unlucky because, I mean, you can see that, you know, as soon as Mane gets the ball, he sort of overran it. So he has to turn around and, like, he's going to go one way or the other, which is either inside or outside. So you can actually see Sissoko pointing to Trippier that if he goes outside, he's yours. If he cuts inside, he's mine. But by the time he raises his hand, the poor guy, the ball's already on its way and it strikes his hand. So
it's a stupid place to raise your hand, honestly.
I mean, we've seen a lot of defenders, you know, hold their hands behind their back.
Yeah.
But you can't blame the guy for marshalling his defense and trying to organize it because the back line was a mess and they were still trying to get into their positions and stuff. So
that's true. But then you can also blame Liverpool for getting the penalty. It was fair.
100% clean. Yeah. On paper, that's a clean penalty.
Yeah. So, and then that just changed game plan for both teams.
Right.
What I really liked about Liverpool post that goal was how their midfield unit operated. Yep. Wijnaldum and Fabinho and Henderson.
Yep.
They were so fluid, man. Like, just attaching themselves to the defense, attaching themselves to the offense.
Right.
And also just sticking close together, shutting down that whole play from the center philosophy that Pochettino likes to do. I think they did a tremendous job. And because of their sort of adaptiveness in terms of playing the game that way,
yeah,
I think that is the biggest sort of reason why Liverpool held through that 1-0 lead.
Fair. I get where you're coming from. But again, from a neutral sort of standpoint, it was really cool to see Van Dijk and Alisson. There were a couple of chances that Son had and the kind of shots that, you know, like Spurs had eight sort of shots on target.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. And yeah, we can be harsh on them and say that they weren't clinical enough and, you know, they should have probably scored. And it almost seemed like a formality to get the second goal, you know, towards the end. But Alisson, man, I mean, I remember we've always been debating about this. Like, if Alisson and Van Dijk were there against Madrid last year, would it have been a different result?
I mean, instead of Loris Karius? Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Has to have made a difference.
No, but
maybe 1-0.
Possible. But at the same time, you need to see how Liverpool as a whole have sort of just, like, matured, come together. The new guys, especially Fabinho, Naby Keita, etc.
Right.
So, and Van Dijk, man, he won player of the season in the domestic league. He continued to do his thing in the Champions League. This one particular chance that Son had where, you know, he runs past two defenders and he's almost raring to take the shot. He's, you know, raising his left foot and he thinks he's cleared everyone. And Van Dijk just comes out of nowhere and just like, not today, son.
He's taking a serious claim on Ballon d'Or this year, I think.
Yeah, but when he was asked in an interview, he said, no, I'm Messi. Messi has to win. Messi's God.
Well, humble guy. Yeah. But even Alisson, like, some of his saves seemed straightforward. I remember this one Eriksen free kick chance that was actually a very tough save.
Yeah.
But just eight shots on target, in theory, means that Spurs actually attacked them to an extent.
Right.
It didn't seem like it was too effective.
Yeah.
But Alisson and Van Dijk being there, a huge reason why they sort of held through.
Right.
Also, this is the first clean sheet in a UCL final since like 2010 when Inter got their treble.
Right.
So
long time.
Julio Cesar, again, Brazilian keeper.
Right.
So that just goes to show what happens in these finals, right?
Yep,
like
yep.
Teams have game plans, but then obviously in the heat of the moment, they forget smaller things. And essentially, it leads to goals on both sides. So 9 years without a clean sheet.
Right.
And these guys going through with a clean sheet. I think Alisson deserves all of the praise he gets.
100%. 100%. I agree. And not just him. I mean, even Klopp with the kind of signings that he's made, his projects now finally showing results. And yeah, I hope his next objective is to continue to kill City and win and eventually dethrone City and win the domestic league.
Well, that's definitely on the cards. And he seems very tied into the project as well. And it's both sides, even Liverpool, the ownership and the management and all, they're all on the same page. They're all heading in the same direction as well, right?
Yeah.
Just talking about Spurs a little bit and the game they played, right?
Yeah.
Like, there were a few solid chances. I remember seeing a Son chance, the 2v2 he had.
Right.
But again, Liverpool defense just shutting stuff down. Their wingbacks this season, I mean, they've emerged out of nowhere and they're world-class level, both of them.
Yep.
I think they're just doing such a good job overall and each position, even Wijnaldum, for example. I'm so impressed with him.
Yeah.
I wasn't this impressed with him last season, for example, right?
Yeah.
I thought he was an okay-ish player.
Yeah.
But this season, he's sort of just come into his own, playing in his preferred midfield position as opposed to being rotated all over the pitch.
Yeah.
And we saw that in the Netherlands game as well, in the Nations League, which we'll talk about shortly.
Yeah.
One thing that I want to talk about is how, you know, usually Pochettino's sort of relying on his wingbacks because he's playing from the center. His wingbacks usually end up getting a lot of space on the wings, and then as a fallback option, he just tries to get them the ball.
Correct.
Trippier, for example, is a good crosser of the ball. I actually like his offensive work more than his defensive work. There's some footwork issue that he needs to work on.
Yep.
But in this game, man, like for some reason,
missing.
They were completely ignored.
Yep.
Even by the defense and the offense, there was this one point where, like in the 36th minute or so, where Trippier had one third of the attacking half just for himself.
Yeah.
Everyone else was concentrated on one side.
Yeah.
And it's not like Tottenham didn't have an opening to pass in the ball. But he was just completely ignored. I'm really curious to find out why that was. Was it a Pochettino tactic? Was it a Liverpool tactic in terms of shutting down lanes? What led to that? Or was it just like underconfidence in terms of what their game plan was regarding the wingbacks?
Yeah, I think it's a combination, I think, of all of that. I mean, this final was sort of put on as like a David versus Goliath, but unfortunately, Goliath wasn't slaughtered.
Right.
Goliath just stamped on David. And yeah, I mean, kudos to, you know, Pochettino and what he did and what Spurs did, you know, to get through to the final and have their miraculous sort of comebacks. But it's almost like Tottenham are sort of happy to like make it to the final. They didn't spend a penny this whole season. They got a new stadium. And they're happy with that. And then Pochettino might want to leave. We don't know. Eriksen might want to leave.
Right.
So yeah, but in terms of the game, I think, yeah, just the penalty killing them off and then not having a good enough answer, a good enough response, even though whacking on, you know, 8 shots on target still didn't help. It was just an off day. I think Liverpool are way too strong, way too ahead in the project. Klopp was just way too smart for them. And just the squad and the way all these guys just play together, like, We're talking about Van Dijk, we're talking about Alisson. We're forgetting that Mane and Salah are joint top scorers in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And I believe they have the same number of goals in the Champions League as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't have much to do. Yes, Mane contributed to the penalty. Salah scored the penalty. After that, we didn't really see them. We haven't spoken about Firmino and how he's so integral to the closing down and the shutting down. And
right
place, right time, perfect number 9 striker.
Just their presence enough is enough to unnerve any defensive line, right? So.
Right.
You have to be so careful that if you focus on your attack a lot, you always run the risk of Mane and Salah just running out of nowhere, creating a run, and then just someone getting the ball to them. So it always just tears apart whatever or stretches out the players across the field.
Right.
Also, one thing I noticed in the 70th minute, the biggest morale buster for any team, Sissoko, Rose, and Trippier all go down at the same time. When you're 1-0 down, when you've tried everything you can to sort of come level and stuff, and three of your players, pretty integral players, any players integral, just go down at the same time with potential injuries or fatigue or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think that was like the dagger in sort of Tottenham's
just
spirits and morale overall, right?
Right. So yeah, it was just an off day, man. We didn't see Ali doing his thing. Son had his chances. He couldn't cut in and, you know, take his shots. Eriksen was finally kept quiet. Kane, maybe not fit, still probably play him and still replace Moura in the first team. Didn't have much to do. So, yeah, no, kudos to Liverpool, kudos to Klopp. It's his third UCL final, finally, that he's won, third time lucky.
Yeah.
He had actually lost in total 6 previous finals, including last season's Champions League. So, kudos to them. I think it was just a Liverpool domination on display. And Spurs, you know, did their thing, made it to the final. Great. Let's move on from there. Let's see what happens to the players. Let's see what's happened to the manager. Beyond that, yeah, I think it's a game for them to forget. I think the Spurs fans were just happy enough to, like, you know, go to the...
final for them, which is huge, man.
Yeah. No, technically second final. I believe they were in a final in some 1961 or something.
This first
European Cup. This is the first Champions League final.
Not European Cup, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you spoke about how Liverpool dominated, and I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
But if you look at the stats on paper, it's completely the opposite. It's 61% possession for Spurs, 8 shots on target.
Yeah.
39% for Liverpool and only 3 shots on target.
Right.
So on paper, like if you haven't seen the match, on paper you're like, oh, they lost or something like that.
Yeah.
And then when you see the match, you're like, oh, that's why they lost.
Right. which is actually, you know, a really fun thing to see that Liverpool's always known for their attacking sort of, you know, sense of play. You know, crazy ass wingers on either side can shoot. You have your defenders, you know, helping up with, you know, corners and Van Dijk being a beast that he is. To see their defensive side, to see them soak up pressure, to see Alisson do his thing was really, really cool. So yes, I still believe that as a neutral, it was a really sad match for a UCL final. But this was like Liverpool stamping their authority, like, we're here, baby. Like, be scared of us. Be very afraid.
Scared, I'm sure everyone is, especially Guardiola. He knows what he's in for next season. They lost by a point, man. So no joke.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's move on to the other European final, the Europa League final. Again, one thing we haven't mentioned, all 4 teams from the EPL.
Whoa.
Which is pretty, pretty impressive.
Best league in the world, baby.
Best league in the world. Okay. So this was Chelsea and Arsenal. For anyone who doesn't know, Shreyas is a massive, massive Chelsea fan. So he was crying out of happiness.
Debatable.
Yeah. We saw the Europa League specialist Unai Emery finally lose a final.
Yeah.
Which was good. Okay. It was nice.
Yeah.
Even though Hazard came out on paper as the guy who was the best player, in my opinion, it was Giroud this match, which I never thought I would ever say about any match in my entire life. But Olivier Giroud killed it this game.
He did. I mean, Hazard did his thing, 2 goals, 1 assist. But yeah, Giroud did his thing, man. Giroud wins the penalty very, very smartly. The first goal came out of nowhere.
That header was tough.
That was crazy. I mean, yeah, Laurent Koscielny used to be one of the best, emphasis on used to be, one of the best defenders in the Premier League. And, you know, the ball wasn't like, oh, I see Giroud. Like Emerson saying, oh, I see Giroud. I'm going to put in that ball exactly like that.
Yeah.
He just put it in. He's like, yeah, take a shot.
Like, it was like mid-height level. Yeah, it was like, should I kick it? Should I hit it?
Exactly. And like, you can see from the back, like Giroud's expecting that. He runs across Koscielny like there's no tomorrow. And by the time Koscielny's like putting his leg up, like, oh, I'll get my leg up to, like, you know, in the way of the ball.
Right.
He's done that half dive header.
Yeah.
Czech had no chance.
Well placed.
Absolutely. So
impressive.
I mean, this guy, you know, this guy gets a lot of stick. Like, he won a World Cup medal. I think he played every single minute of the World Cup. And yes, he didn't have a goal. Yeah, he may not have had an assist, but this guy puts in his hard work.
He's the type of striker that'll create goal scoring opportunities for you, as opposed to an out and out striker who's scoring goals for you.
Right.
And for a team like Chelsea, like they were set up last season, like still getting used to Starry ball and all of that stuff.
Right.
That's the sort of striker they needed, as opposed to an out and out striker who would get you goals. Because if you're relying on Hazard and Jorginho's and Kovacic and the wings sort of building up the play, you don't need a guy who gets the ball in the attacking third and creates and scores the goal. You need a guy who can sort of enable that play.
Correct, link up and stuff.
In a conducive manner and help Hazard out wherever he needs to. So I think Giroud did a pretty good job in this final.
Totally, man. He was also crying about the fact that he wasn't particularly first team because Higuain comes in and he was first team for the Premier League and Giroud was first team for the Europa League. But yeah, Chelsea has this sort of thing where they offer only 1-year extensions to people above 30.
Yeah.
And before the final, he's like, I'm blue, I will kill Arsenal. And he did.
He did.
Yeah.
He's ex-Arsenal, man. So much like Czech and Giroud. Like there's so much like Arsenal-Chelsea happening here.
Right.
I think it was pretty good. Even though I felt like Arsenal had the upper hand throughout the first half.
Yep.
it just didn't translate too much, right?
And right.
Even with the Chelsea defense, it was very interesting because they lined up as a four at the back.
Yeah.
But in like practically it played out as almost like a back three with the focus on the left side of things, like right. Emerson just darting bombing forward up, the entire
yep.
time.
Yep.
And the right sometimes seemed to be open. Aspi ended up playing like a right center backish
correct.
Role.
Yep.
And Arsenal tried targeting that right side, but they didn't really do much damage, I guess.
Right. I mean, if you ask me before the final, like, is this a clean, you know, Chelsea has got the upper hand and they'll win easily? Not at all, not happening, because, you know, Aubameyang's scary, Lacazette's scary, Ozil on his day can do his thing. So yeah, the first half was like that. They were piling on the pressure. They had some good chances. But yeah, these guys were, they weren't having a good day at all. Aubameyang, you know, had that one chance. He skied the ball. Lacazette had some random penalty call, which wasn't a clear penalty at all.
Right.
You know, Xhaka had this shot that was really, really crazy. I think that's the only thing he can do now is just shoot the ball really well.
Yeah.
And it clipped the top of the bar. I think that was the only time.
That was a solid shot, though.
That was a solid shot. Yeah. That was the only time Kepa was scared, probably. So, yeah, I think, you know, it was almost like if the deadlock would have been broken by Arsenal probably in the first half, I think this would have been a very different match. But yeah, Giroud did his thing, opened up the floodgates. Hazard had his fun. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Got dragged out for a long time to the point that I almost felt like it wouldn't happen. It just fall through over like 15 or 25 million. But obviously, Real being Real, they pulled through.
Right.
And interesting fun fact, Pedro now is the only player, I believe,
yep.
to win Premier League, World Cup, Euro, UCL and Europa League.
Yep. So yeah, so this is a weird way to say bye to Hazard, and we don't know what Sarri is doing. So, but yeah, enough about the match. What happens next?
Sarri, speaking of Sarri, sorry, one more point. First trophy and he's out. Seems like it. At the time of recording, there's nothing confirmed, but seems like he's heading to Juve.
Yeah, it's so weird because, I mean, the media almost dubbed him, or not almost, they did dub him dead man walking Jan onwards when, you know, we were just losing left, right and center. And it's funny how things work at Chelsea with respect to, like, Roman Abramovich and his admin team. It's like irrespective of the league finish position or irrespective of the Europa League, you know, final, his destiny was almost sort of certain. And I think it's a lot to do with the fact that he's been super stubborn with his system. It's also how he wasn't playing the young players. So
the guy's not smoking a cigarette on the touchline, man. What more do you want?
He has a randomized e-cigarette.
And, yeah, and he chews like, yeah. I don't even know. He has a big dependency.
Right.
So that wraps up our analysis of the Champions League and the Europa League. Let's jump to our next segment. And why I call this a segment is because we're talking about this for the first time ever, the UEFA Nations League.
So before we get into the matches, because it's already over, a quick rundown of what the hell the league actually is.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So bear with me, people. First of all, in layman terms, this is one way or another way to qualify for the Euros, which is every 4 years. And also, it's meant to replace unnecessary or pointless international friendlies, which are sort of, you know, through the a packed season calendar of club football.
Right.
And you have these players playing anywhere from 30 to 38 matches off a season domestically. Then they have their knockout tournaments, they have their Champions League, et cetera, et cetera. So some players end up, like the first teamers end up playing 50, 60, 70 matches, you know, a year or a season. And for them to like represent their country but have a friendly, maybe commercially it wasn't making sense, competitively it wasn't making sense. So they sort of like put this package together and they're like, oh, let's make it competitive, let's get a new trophy and let's make this more exciting. So here goes. We've got 55 nations in Europe vying for 24 spots in Euro 2020. And how it works is the Nations League has the best ranked teams in League A, and then the next best in League B, so on and so forth, they go up to D. Now, the winners of B, C, and D get promoted, and the last place of A, B, and C get relegated. This happens every 2 years, which is when the Nations League happens.
Okay.
And the winners of Leagues A go into a knockout, and then the winner of them wins the trophy.
Could they make this more complicated?
Oh, it gets worse. Yeah, so Euro qualifiers have just begun. So in the Euros, we have 10 groups. The top two, the winner and the second place, they get through and that makes it 20. and then the remaining four go to playoffs.
Right.
Now, the winners of Leagues A and D now get the opportunity to play those playoffs.
Okay.
So instead of having the playoffs within the qualifiers, these playoffs will come from the Nations League.
Okay.
So that's how it's supposedly linked. I don't get the scheduling. I don't get why the Nations League is already over and the Euro qualifiers are still ongoing.
And also this being a every two-year tournament as opposed to Euro being every 4 years.
Correct. So I think there it's only going to be the promotion, the relegation from Leagues A to D.
So essentially what they've done is that with this two-year cycle for the Nations League, right, 4 year cycle for Euro and 4 year cycle for World Cup, yeah, there'll be good, fun international football every year.
Right. So I think how I see it is the Euro is like the UEFA Champions League and the Nations League is like the Europa League. So like you'll always have like a team winning a trophy every 2 years. It's just a smaller tournament versus a bigger tournament.
It's great, man. As long as international friendlies have more weightage and are more competitive, I'm more than happy to watch it. So Just talking about the Nations League real quick, let's skip over all of the build-up and build-up matches. Let's talk about the semis and the finals,
right,
which, by the way, just came out of the blue for me. All of a sudden, I woke up, I got my notification, match tonight, UEFA Nations League semi-final. I was like, what? When's the final? Final's like 4 days away. I was like, okay, great.
Let's do this.
Fun football to watch.
Right.
So it was Switzerland-Portugal, yep, in one semi-final, and it was Netherlands and England in the other.
Yep.
Switzerland and Portugal was an out-and-out Ronaldo show.
Yep.
Hat-trick. Main man, I love this guy, yep, and including a scorcher of a free kick.
Right.
Beyond that, there wasn't much to note, except it was good to see Portugal's team outside of Ronaldo as well.
Correct.
Adding a lot to it. We've obviously seen Bernardo Silva kill it in the EPL,
oh my God,
the past few seasons.
Yep.
But they have such a good young crop of players as well, right?
Right.
We both love João Félix. Yep. His was slightly underwhelming, but that's fine. He's 19.
Yep.
But there are so many other players who are super young. And yep, Ronaldo himself said after the eventual win that I'm so excited about this team.
Right.
And he said it with sort of a detachment or a disassociation of himself.
Correct.
He's like, there's a future for Portugal in football, yes, and I'm just super, super happy about that. And it's clear to see. That's a great team.
Yep.
And apart from that, Portugal, Switzerland, pretty straightforward, not much there.
Yep.
The other semi-final though, England and Netherlands,
yep,
turned out to be a good football match, I would say. And not only for footballing reasons, but VAR itself.
Right.
There was a lot of, some people would say interference, some people would say necessary interference.
Yep.
But there was a lot of stoppage. There was a lot of VAR drama.
Right.
And even though Netherlands came out winners, it felt like they weren't the deserved winners.
Really? I mean, it was a shambolic defensive display almost by two countries, more one than the other.
I agree.
Yeah, just going through the goals. So Netherlands won 3-1. It was, De Ligt, funnily, who's had a crazy ass season at Ajax, captaining.
He made a boo-boo.
Yeah. But he made up for his boo-boo.
Yeah, he did.
And yeah, he got them back in the game. And then England, as England has made their boos.
Yeah, always. That's always. If they don't, it's something's wrong.
Right. It's you know, it was hilarious. It's almost funny how, like, I remember, you know, so this whole new concept of passing out of from the keeper and then, you know, building a play from behind. A lot of teams are doing it. A lot of countries are doing it. And they've been doing it for a while now. Like, Barkley, I guess, has enough experience doing it with Sarri ball. And you see him make that blunder where he's trying to pass it back to the keeper. And the forward just pounces on and it's way too easy for them. And, you know, they get their second goal.
Right.
So, I mean, for me, it was very cool to see England crumble the way they did, because I like seeing England crumble, because there's so much of hoo-ha with them. And oh my God.
Negative Nancy, man.
I mean, come on. I mean, just coming from the golden generation, which we'll obviously get to later, that's going to be a fun segment. But it was, I just don't like why there's so much of like expectation from England. Yes, they're really cool. And yes, I respect all these youngsters and what they've done at club level. They've been consistent and stuff like that. But it was nice to see them crumble. And Netherlands didn't have a good game and they still came out. So I'm really looking forward to what's in store with them. And Ronald Koeman has got this young side, which, you know, they've got the youngsters from Ajax. They've got VVD and Wijnaldum for experience. So nice match to see, definitely.
Yeah, really, really hopeful to see Netherlands in the future as well. You know, one thing specifically about the Dutch squad that I want to talk about, which again kind of hit me out of the blue, was how good Wijnaldum has become over the course of the season.
Yep.
I don't know if I missed out on this, because I remember him being last season, him being used, like he was sort of what James Milner was doing to a certain extent, just plugging the holes in terms of making him play at different positions. He's been doing that since Newcastle and even before that. But he's always said his preferred is midfield.
Correct.
And this season, he sort of got to play his preferred role, like Fabinho and Wijnaldum, maybe Henderson or Milner, whoever they throw in.
Yep.
And he, all over the course of the season, I feel like he's just become like a truly world-class player, like someone who in the future will be regarded as a top five in his position going forward, right? Which you didn't see. And then out of the blue, he just developed his game into someone who's confident, who's very attack-minded, who's not scared of running back. He's checking all the right boxes. And I'm sure Koeman and Jurgen Klopp is super happy with his progress.
Absolutely. He's almost like your unsung hero. He's, you know, he doesn't get the sort of credit that, you know, he deserves. Even against Barcelona, he was the one who started, you know, the comeback with the header and stuff. He's almost like your perfect midfielder. He knows how to sort of help with the defense. Decently good on the ball, can pass really well, has an eye for goal. Liverpool have really struck gold with this guy. And he had, you know, a really good performance with Newcastle as well. There was one match where I think they won 5-0 or something, and he scored all 5 goals.
Right.
So FPL captain, baby.
He's going to be expensive next season.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Everyone in Liverpool is going to be expensive. I think that's how it works with Premier League winners or any team that's been successful. They'll have these two progressive sort of things to see. One is on FPL, they'll be super expensive.
Right.
And on FIFA, their ratings will like randomly be like super high. Like, ye kya chal raha hai?
Like, I want to see like Alexander Arnold's pace coming into next season.
Right. No, it was really cool to see Portugal do their thing, sort of minus Ronaldo. Yes, he was playing and yes, he was there, but Bernardo Silva was on fire. He's the one who assisted the goal.
There were points where I saw Bernardo Silva contesting headers with De Ligt and winning.
No way.
Winning. Like, I saw two headers he won against De Ligt.
Nice.
This guy's a dynamo, man.
Yeah, he's like that energizer bunny, but like a skillful dude, and he has a beautiful left foot and has an eye for goal. And just watching that assist and even the way the guy takes the shot. So he was sort of raring to shoot. He's on the left side and, you know, he sucks in two defenders and he sees this guy from probably the corner of his eye on the right side. And he just sort of lays it on, but it's almost too heavy. So the forward has to like adjust his run, get behind the ball. And you're like, oh, so the opportunity to take the shot has almost been missed. And then he just whacks it in and Jasper Cillessen didn't even come close to it. So that was a really cool goal and Portugal very much deserved to get that goal. And to win in Portugal, the first UEFA Nations League winners.
Yeah, at home soil.
At home soil.
Also, the goal and how it came and, you know, the sort of lack of Ronaldo's involvement, very reminiscent of that Euro win as well. Nene ended up scoring that winner there.
2016, yeah.
But, you know, quick question, all right?
Yep.
And I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Yep.
There's this whole, obviously, decade-long debate that's happening, Ronaldo versus Messi.
Yep.
Just talking about their international legacy, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of what they've achieved and stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of people would be like, okay, he's won the Euro, Ronaldo, right. And now he's won the Nations League. He has two international trophies, technically, to his name.
Yep.
But on the flip, firstly, Messi doesn't play either of these tournaments.
Yes.
They're both Europe-based.
Yeah.
He's gotten to, what, 2 or 3 Copa America finals?
Yeah.
Lost them, sure.
Right.
He's also gotten to a World Cup final,
right,
which is huge.
Yeah.
Do you think Messi's international legacy surpasses Ronaldo's or not?
Okay, so here's the thing. I am not a Messi fanboy or a Portugal fan or a Ronaldo fanboy. I just respect them for the, you know, whatever they've done, and they have like very different sort of game senses and game abilities.
Sure.
Coming down to their country setups, I think if you look at the Argentine squads over the course of, you know, all those years that Messi's been a part of it, he's been surrounded by superstars. He's had Aguero, he's had Di Maria.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had, you know, Javier Zanetti, you know, when Messi was a kid, these guys, you know, were still doing their defense and stuff. So, I mean, to see Messi surrounded by all these guys and now eventually become captain, and he lost the World Cup, big deal. He got player of the tournament. I don't understand why. It was more like a sympathetic thing.
He played so well.
I don't know, but no, to see Ronaldo on the scene, I think he first represented his country in 2004. And since 2004, in the Euro, which was also in Portugal, made it to the final, lost to Greece.
Yeah.
Since then, Ronaldo scored in 10 different international tournaments.
That's true.
In Euro 2016, the final, where he went injured in probably like the 10th or 20th minute or whatever, he was in tears. And then when he makes his way back to the dugout, like, he was more animated than the coach.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, and the coach is like...
Especially when it was about to end, he's like, oh, you do this. Oh, yeah. That coach is standing there. He's like, tu hi kar le.
Ha, it's like, my petro, tu kar le. Like, This is your thing, shine.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I think Ronaldo has sort of lifted, you know, that country. He's kept that country on his shoulders for the longest time. He scored so many freaking hat tricks, like the hat trick he scored against Switzerland. He's now scored 30% of all Portugal's hat tricks, and Portugal has been playing football for almost 100 years.
Yeah, but like before Ronaldo was like Eusebio, that's it. Maybe.
Yeah, but I mean, even the current squad, you have these young guns. You have Yao Felix, you have Bernardo Silva, Bruno Fernandes. The guy who scored the goal is some Gonzalez, something like that. So these guys are killer as well. But Ronaldo just steps up, 34 years old, does not slow down. I think Ronaldo has done way better, both at club level and at national level, because he's been to a bunch of different countries, different leagues, toughest league in the world. That's where he made his name. Did his thing in Madrid. Now, hopefully continuing to do his thing for Juve, or so you would hope.
I would hope, and I'm confident. And, you know, that's a fair argument. I see what the points you're trying to make.
Yep.
To me, obviously, Ronaldo doing well is in my best interest. I'm a Juventus fan.
Yep.
And I have confidence that he will do good for at least a season more, if not two more seasons, because of the level of fitness he's at.
Yes.
I still want to side with Messi on this one. Okay. I think overall, in terms of the impact on pitch, minus goals, obviously, and it's not like Messi scores any fewer goals, but impact on pitch and what he can make his team do overall,
I feel like
Messi is the overall better player. And in terms of international legacy as well, he doesn't have a trophy to his name, but I feel like he's done more damage or deserves more... more praise. It's as if that, you know, Ronaldo wins a trophy and all of a sudden Messi's the worst player in the world. That's how football fans, like, they're always polarizing in this regard.
Right.
I still feel like his international legacy is commendable.
Fair. I mean, I know where you're coming from, and like, major respect to Messi in terms of how he sort of upped his game with Barcelona, in terms of, like, he had goal of the season in the Champions League. That free kick against Alisson didn't even come close. So, I mean, respect where respect due, but I just think overall Ronaldo has always sort of one-upped Messi, and don't give me hate, but I think Messi is going to be on his way out very soon, because he's just been so unlucky with Argentina. Like, imagine, like, last year's World Cup. Just ask Rojo how he felt when Mbappe just ran so fast past him, and he's like, oh, main isko gira deta hun, but he's already in the freaking penalty box, you dumbass. Yeah, he's just been super unlucky, and you can't be unlucky like consistently tournament over tournament over tournament.
Interesting, dude. I'm sure we'll have these Ronaldo-Messi debates ongoing. It's, according to me, the funnest thing to talk about in football.
Right. Yeah.
It's just so much fun. Anyways, that wraps up this segment where we spoke about the UEFA Nations League and obviously some Ronaldo-Messi chit-chat at the end.
Yep.
Why don't we jump to the next segment, which is TFC's take. All right, Shez, what are we talking about?
So we're talking about the new generation of players versus old generation. So specifically, let's say the first decade of the 21st century, which is 2001 to 2010.
This is England. Why don't we just do a golden generation versus current?
Fair.
How about that?
Yeah, so yeah, that makes sense. This pretty much fits into the right categories. And yay, we get to rip apart England.
I don't know, man. I like this current squad, dude.
I don't know. I mean, look, I come from a really cool place, because I started watching football because of David Beckham.
Right.
And, you know, England captain, number 7, Manchester United.
Fashion icon.
Poster boy of football, man. He's such a nice guy.
That's true.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I feel like his fashion stuff actually takes away from how good a footballer he was.
Yeah.
His right foot, man.
Yeah.
He'll put a ball anywhere he wanted to.
Exactly. Like, You see players like Trent Alexander-Arnold and Trippier, you know, just, you know, trying to do exactly what he does with his free kicks, and which is why Trippier is called like the Barry Beckham after his one free kick in the World Cup.
Yeah, which was semi-final, I think.
Yeah, which was semi-final.
Pretty important goal.
Yeah, but anyway, you know, coming back to old generation, it was not just Beckham. Yes, Beckham was captain. You had Lampard, Gerrard, Scholes, Gary Neville, Owen, Rooney, Shearer. You know, it's just nonstop. And these guys would make quarterfinals and they're like, yay, you should get knighted by the queen and you achieved your objective.
OB, quarterfinals.
So, I mean, come on, are you guys seriously, you know, like, happy just making it to the quarters? But yeah, at the same time, they've been super unlucky as well. 2006 World Cup in Germany, I think there was a quarterfinal or a pre-quarter, England versus Germany. And Lampard takes his typical crazy ass shot. It hits the underside of the bar, bounces inside, clear as day, almost a foot inside the goal, and then bounces out. No VAR.
Yeah.
And that
or goal line as well.
Or goal line, yeah.
But you know, to me, if you feel like the fortunes of a team are decided by that one instance,
yeah.
then the team still hasn't done enough throughout the rest of the game to make more of an impact, right?
Right.
So I don't usually side with decisions like those
yeah.
unless the game has been very dead.
Right.
Like if it's nil-nil and that was the only sort of chance or right. actionable chance, then it's understandable. But
right.
if you lose because of that, then yeah. it means you didn't do more.
Right. So, yeah, I get where you're coming from. And it's so funny sort of seeing all these players not like sort of channelize and not sort of be sort of cooperative or not like be able to coordinate enough when they're playing for their country, because when they were playing for their clubs, they were killing it.
The whole club rivalry situation in the EPL, I feel like led to this sort of the national team not being able to come together and do what they need to be doing, right?
Yeah.
Which you don't see in the current guys, even though the current guys are, well, they have a healthy core in the Spurs from the Spurs unit.
Right.
They have all of these younger guys,
yeah.
but it just seems like what Southgate is doing with them and what direction he's leading them to, winning for your national team is paramount, as opposed to just animosity coming in because you play for that club and I play for this club. It
right.
might just be because these guys are young and it's not festering
correct.
That much.
Yeah.
But with the golden generation, I truly feel that the whole club animosity came into play, right? And
yeah.
you don't see this with other teams. You don't see a Ramos fighting with a PK.
Right.
Like he probably is in the dressing room given
yeah.
these two personalities, but
yeah.
on the pitch, they're one cohesive unit.
Absolutely.
They're playing for Spain.
Yep.
Which I feel like the golden generation just suffered
for. Failed to
yeah.
do. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember reading this interview that Lampard was asked, you know, his take on Chelsea versus England and representing your country and stuff like that. And he was asked, like, if you could change something about the setup, about the coaching, about tactics, would you change something? And he said, look, yeah, we were really good players, you know, for our respective clubs. And, you know, we try to bring all of our strengths, you know, all together in one cohesive unit. But he's like, there's so many simple things that we sort of tend to take for granted. Like, for example, he said when we were in the same hotel and we went down for like our breakfast and stuff, he always found himself sticking around and talking to John Terry or Ashley Cole,
right.
who also play for Chelsea.
Right.
You see the United guys, Ferdinand, Gary Neville sort of, you know, sticking together.
Yeah.
You saw sort of Gerrard and Owen sort of sticking together. So, you know, something as small as that and as simple as that, he just said that cohesiveness, that oneness just wasn't felt. And where does it come from? Does the manager have to like enforce it and make sure everyone's on the same page?
Ooh, Ericsson. Sven Göran Ericsson is going to be like, you talk to him. Hey, you sit with him. That's not happening.
Like, yeah, they're not in school,
they're
like
old,
back benches.
They're big boys, man.
So these guys have definitely got something good going. But I'd like to ask you one very specific question. What's
Bring
your take
it.
On Jordan Pickford?
I love him.
Oh, God.
Actually, wait. I like him.
Exactly.
I like him. He's good. He's good. He's young. He's blossoming.
Okay.
You see this progress over the past two seasons in him,
yeah. Yeah.
which is the only thing you can hope for, honestly. He's not
right.
going to just burst out of the gate, be like, yo, I'm Manuel Neuer,
right.
deal with it.
Right.
He's going to get there, which is understandable. That's how most players do it.
Yeah.
So a lot of positive progress. And what more can you hope for? Also, who else is going to do that? Joe Hart? Who else is going to keep? As a number one option, I don't think there's anything wrong with him.
So you're saying he's the best or the worst?
No, he's actually good enough. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
He had a decent showing, man, in the Nations League.
Right.
Especially the third place match. I think he did a really good job.
Yeah.
So,
saved a couple of penalties. And scored one.
And even against, even in their semi-final too against Netherlands,
yeah.
like their defense was in shambles.
Right.
But Pickford was still doing good
thing.
Stuff.
Right.
So I'm net positive on Jordan Pickford and this England squad overall.
Right. Fair enough, I guess. I think what we're trying to say is that Gareth Southgate overall has sort of got something good going on. And we're expecting some more stuff from him. And let's see what this young English team can do.
Yeah, let's see. Anyway, that wraps up this episode of The Football Corner. Again, you guys can find us at Muncher Media on all social media. Don't forget to rate, comment, like, subscribe. Reach out if you have thoughts about our take or anything else that you wanted to add to our analysis. And catch you guys next week.
See you.